Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I am happy to be with you here in this second week of January. I know I complain about time going by fast, but that's a little bit crazy in terms of being confused about what day it is. No, it really is January. At least I'm about 99% sure it's January. At any rate, I hope you're having a wonderful week so far, and I am excited to bring you another interview today. I am speaking today with Kelly J. Beard about her memoir, An Imperfect Rapture. There isn't a blurb on the back of the book, per se, but I will read you one of the quotes. This is from Andre Dubos III, author of Gone So Long and House of Sand and Fog, and that says, "Written with spare, sensual, and deeply evocative prose of a master, this brave and ultimately transcendent memoir is an absolute gem. What Kelly J. Beard accomplishes here is stunning. By stepping nakedly back into her youth as the daughter of Christian fundamentalists, a lifelong couple whose love for one another never seemed to wane, she also steps back into violence and neglect, poverty and the shame of the poor, the striving for one's very selfhood when few seem to be able to help or pay much attention. And Beard renders all of this and more with a poet's clear-eyed search for the truth. An Imperfect Rapture is a plaintive hymn of forgiveness, and it moved to tears many times over. This is, quite simply, a beautiful book." So that is a really wonderful quote and very accurate of my experience of this book. I will say that if you are thinking of, if you're a fan of memoirs and this is something that you want to read, I will give, there are many trigger warnings here in terms of domestic abuse, child abuse. There's some verbal and physical abuse. There is religious abuse, I would say. I mean, there's not a great experience with religion in a lot of ways in this book. There are a lot of potential trigger warnings, but if you don't have to worry about those, I mean, and if you do, please, you know your limits. Don't read this book if that's going to give you any kind of problems. But if you do read this book, it really is beautiful. It reads like a novel. There were times when I forgot that I was reading a memoir, and then I would remember, and I would be like, oh my gosh, this actually happened to Kelly. And I would get angry or sad on her behalf. I would get amazed by where she's come in her life from this experience. It really is just her early years. It stops when she's around 24 or 25. Just the writing is beautiful. The story, I can't say the story is beautiful. Parts of it are. Parts of it are very hard to read. Parts of it made me, as I said, sad and angry. Other parts sometimes made me smile, made me, I think overall, I would say just wow. I was completely impressed by what came out of this seemingly not so great, one might even say horrible childhood, and where Kelly has managed to come even through the events of her past. So it's definitely a story of overcoming. It's a story of a journey that took her many different places through many different elements of unhealthy behaviors and brought her to where she is now. So I don't want to talk too much about it because we're going to talk about it, of course, in the interview. I just want to say again, wow. I really loved reading this book, even though when I first encountered it, I was like, oh, that sounds painful. And as I said, it is at times painful. It made me feel a whole range of emotions. And yet overall, like I said, it does read like a novel and it's beautifully written and just wow. I guess what I'm coming down on wow, but yeah, very, very beautifully written. So enough of me not being able to come up with more words besides wow. Let's go ahead and get to that interview so you can hear a few different words, okay? Again, the book is An Imperfect Rapture by Kelly J. Beard.
Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Sarah.
It is wonderful to have you here, and we are here to talk about your new book. Before we get to the book, though, I would love for my listeners just to get to know you a little bit. So if you could share whatever you're comfortable sharing about yourself, that would be great.
Okay. Thanks, Sarah. And especially thank you for inviting me to be on your podcast. That is a really nice honor. I appreciate it. About me, let's see. I actually grew up in the West and the Northwest, but I moved to Atlanta back when I married a poet 30 years ago. And the deal was we were going to move back to the Northwest the next year. So here we are.
Had that work out for you.
You can see what kind of weight I pull. So I've been in Atlanta since then. I practiced employment discrimination law for over 2 decades here and did, just a lot of work as a lawyer and as a, I worked some for the Georgia Coalition Against Domestic Violence and did some things, mainly professional things for a couple decades. And then I just kind of decided I needed to do something else a little more creative, which is kind of where I'd started back way before I went to law school. So I went to the Vermont College of Fine Arts, which is a low residency, and studied there. I graduated in 2016 and worked on this memoir, not just then, I started previously, but I worked on this memoir throughout. And then the most interesting part about my life, I will tell you, is that I had a grandbaby a year ago, March 5th. And that has totally rocked our little world. We moved from our house of 2 decades, moved into Atlanta, into the city, and I babysit really often.
That's
kind of my life in a nutshell.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So the book is a memoir. It's called An Imperfect Rapture, and can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. First of all, I'll just say it's memoir is just so complicated because you're looking at, when you're really writing memoir, you're looking at a slice of life. It's not autobiography. I think it always kind of confuses people who aren't that familiar with the genre. I remember when I started telling a few folks that I was writing memoir, I was in an office complex. I had my own practice, but I was in an office and I had, other lawyer friends around down the hall. And this one guy stopped in and we were pretty good friends. And he said, "What are you working on?" I said, "Well, actually I'm starting to write a memoir." And he said, "A memoir? You mean like something about yourself personally?" And this is a lawyer, remember? And I said, "Yeah, it's memoir." And he goes, "Why would anybody want to read about your life?" So the thing about memoir is that it's a little scary to realize that you really aren't telling people your whole life. There's something about what has gone on in your life that just has a lot of heat for you or a lot of energy, and everybody has it. There are places in your life where you just keep circling back or you can't figure out, and those are the kind of mysteries that people investigate in memoir. Does that answer your question at all, Sarah?
Well, it does, but can you tell us a little bit about, let me come at this a slightly different way. Mm-hmm. So it isn't your whole autobiography. It's not, I was born in a log cabin in 1862 or whatever,
right.
But kind of focuses on a specific journey that you took, and involves your family. So can you tell us how you decided what you're going to write, what you're going to include, those types of things, and give us a little bit of that story and how it developed, how you chose that aspect of your life for the memoir?
Sure. I would say, of course, I always wrote, but I would say I started writing An Imperfect Rapture in my early to mid-50s. I had always written. I'd actually, back in grammar school, I thought I was a poet and a writer, and I'd written a little play they actually put on in school. I mean, I always thought that was the direction I would go. But then I didn't, for the reason at the end of the book, I don't want to give it away, but what occurs at the end of the book is what prompted me to just leave everything, including any creative endeavor I had at that point, and to just take a completely different path in my life. So fast forward to my 50s, because the memoir ends at about 24, 25. So fast forward, and I'm starting to think back about, my early life. I've been a mom now for 20 years. My daughter's starting to leave home. She's going to college. And I'm starting to think about what a different life she had than I had, partly because I worked really, really hard so she wouldn't have a life like I had. And I think that for me, the initial idea actually of even writing memoir, because I think I was drawn to novels and, you know, to fiction and to poetry initially, but it occurred to me shortly after my daughter went to college in 2010 that I had not really ever revealed this part of my life to anyone in my current life. No lawyers knew it, no friends, and not my daughter. And so I just said, you know what, I'm just going to sit down. I didn't just do this, you know, from a bolt of lightning on my head. I mean, I was working with a therapist, and I remember sitting in his office one day, and my daughter had gotten really distant when she went to college, and she was an only child, is an only child. So I was, of course, you know, I was really depressed, and I've had lots of issues with depression in my life, and this was a pretty bad one. So he asked me what, you know, I thought I could do, and I, having had therapy before, I thought I had a great answer for him, and I said I would write her a letter and probably not mail it, but I just kind of tell her all the things, like that I loved her, that I was really sad about feeling so irrelevant now in her life and all these things. And he just looked at me, he was this lovely, very, very old man, a Jungian therapist, and he looked at me and he said, but what about any of that doesn't she know? What could you tell her about your life that she doesn't know? And that was the spark. And I started working on it back then. And I still practiced law. So I read somewhere that Virginia Woolf said she could only write 2 hours a day because that's all the creative steam she had. And I thought, well, you know, Virginia Woolf's a genius. I don't think I should try to write more than she did.
Right.
So I took her cue and, you know, wrote for 2 hours a day. And then, you know, that was the start of it.
Wow. And what has been your daughter's reaction to you revealing this part of your life?
Well, you know, it's really funny because that was 2010, and I think she was totally disinterested, honestly, until she had her baby a year ago. Now, and the book is dedicated to her and to the baby, but I would say I don't think she's read it yet. And I will also say this, because she is brilliant. She has a double major in English Lit and Gender Studies, and she's a critical, you know, theorists. And so my book is really much more creative and raw, I think, although I hope that it's, you know, the prose is evocative and beautiful. I mean, I certainly tried for that. But I would say I'm not even, when I wrote the book, I did think of her. I started out thinking of this person I loved who's an intelligent audience, and thinking she would read it after I was gone. I did not ever expect her to read it while I'm living. And in many ways, if you've read the book, there's so many raw moments in there. I'm fine if she doesn't read it while I'm gone. But it's there. It's almost, you know, it's me. I think that's what started me doing it. But I don't think it's the end game. I think what's been really fun in a maybe a strange way, but I have started to receive I've received a couple of emails from people who are very much like me. I got an email from a woman who is a full professor in a university up north, and she sent me this email saying, I can't believe you wrote my story and no one in my school knows about it. I could never reveal that about myself. And I've had a couple of emails like that, and I think, if anything, that's probably why I wrote the story.
Excuse me while I jump in here so we can take our first break of the podcast, but stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's GSMCpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Before the break, Kelly was speaking about the process of writing this memoir, how it came about, why she decided to write about the specific aspect of her life. And now we're going to talk a little bit more about that decision and what made her decide to go the publishing route on this book.
And it started out for very personal reasons. When did you decide that you wanted to publish it?
I think I decided, as the more I worked on it, it's so much work. I thought, how could I? It's not writing a letter. So, I mean, this was 2010. I worked and worked and worked. And then I thought, probably after about 3 years, I thought it was pretty good. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I can actually publish this. And I started reading, of course, anytime you're working in a genre, you want to read a lot in that genre. I think I read every memoir I could get my hands on. So I really started thinking, I mean, not to be immodest, but I thought, you know, I think mine holds up with a lot of really good ones that I've enjoyed. So I ought to throw it out there. And I also really didn't see any other memoir that was talking about what I'm writing about. Although there are novels out there and there are certainly tons of, you know, gothic caricatures about these folks that I grew up with, there really isn't any serious look at these very complicated characters and experiences. So then I started thinking, I do want this to have whatever audience it's supposed to have, and throw it out there. So then I started going to some workshops. I went to a Taos workshop and worked with this lovely woman, Emily Rapp Black. And at that point, that was probably 2013, and my memoir was 450 pages. Oh, well. I don't want that to scare anybody who might be considering buying the book, because it's only 300 now.
283. Let's be.
Oh, 283. There you go. So it went on a big, big diet. I just at some point I figured out after working with Emily, and I went to another workshop with another very brilliant man, Rigoberto Gonzalez. He was a terrific teacher. And that was in 2014 at Tucson. And I really figured out at that point, whatever some of these people, like Virginia Woolf, have in them that allows them to figure out craft without a teacher, God bless them, they are the geniuses. I really needed someone to help me just unlock some of the craft technique so that it was the best book I could write. And that's really what I wanted to do. So that's why I went back to VCFA.
Mm-hmm. On your website, on your bio, you have a quote that starts with, "I believe the most subversive act a woman can commit is to tell her story," and it's much longer than that. And I love that quote. How has telling your story affected you, or has it?
Oh, it really has. I mean, first thing I'd say about subversion, which is always attractive to me, it's very close to heresy, which I think is also kind of where I've ended up a bit in my life. But it is really scary. I mean, even just thinking about writing it was scary. And I think the scariest part for me beyond, I mean, as I alluded to earlier, first of all, having to reveal this whole other life to people who didn't know anything about it. And I thought would be, you know, a lot of people would not be loving about it. And particularly in our very fractious political environment, I think people, you know, immediately make assumptions about someone who's lived my life. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that was scary. I also have a pretty fractured birth family. I have, of three siblings, only one still talks to me and has talked to me in decades. Two of them haven't talked to me since my father died in 1996. And my mom's still alive. She's 90. She'll be 91 next month. And I just, it just felt, I wanted to be very vigilant about not making this, gas poured on the charred remains of our family. So that was what was really scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you still communicate with your mom?
I do. Yeah, I talk to my mom all the time. She's in a hoot.
Will she or has she read the book?
She will not. I have not told her about the book.
And okay, that makes sense, actually.
No, she's not on the internet. So, and I wouldn't tell her. She's very, go ahead. I'm sorry, what?
No, go ahead. Oh.
She's still the person in many ways religiously that she was in the book. She changed enormously with my daughter. I allude to that in the book. And for a while, she was such a different person with my daughter. I think I understand it more now becoming a grandmother, but she was so different with my daughter. I just felt like there was some kind of sham going on. I thought, what in the world? How can this woman be so, loving and jovial and non-judgmental? Mm-hmm. Who is this woman? And so I don't want to hurt her. I mean, she's, later in life, she's apologized for things that she's done. I don't think I don't think what she did. I think she does have some issues, some darker issues, but they're not mine to deal with. And I wouldn't hurt. I think the book would hurt her, and I wouldn't necessarily want her to be hurt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. This book deals with a lot of very heavy subjects. I keep trying to figure out how to describe it because it's beautifully written. It reads like a novel. But it's about some of these really heavy subjects. And so it's like, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I remember that this isn't a novel. This is a memoir. So how was it to write about those events when you hadn't even really talked about them up until that point?
That is such an interesting question, Sarah. And I think it changed in the course of writing. Obviously, if I started in 2010, it just got published last year. It took a minute to write it. And I think the first several years before I came across this gentleman, Pennebaker, and I'll tell you about him in a second, but I think the first few years was really kind of a grievance, and it was not as good a book. It was too long. But beyond that, I don't think I had the skill or the patience to get into the minds and the hearts of the people I was writing about other than myself. And so as I look back at some of those early drafts, I see a lot more anger than I ended up having when I wrote the story. I think when I finally finished the manuscript, I think that I came across this guy actually while I was at VCFA, came across his work, and he's a professor. He was the chair for a while. I'm not sure if he's still the chair, but he was the chair of the University of Texas psychology department, University of Texas at Austin psychology department. Super brilliant guy. And he spent essentially his whole career researching how people write about trauma in ways that will make the trauma less for them. So while I kind of hate to use the word cathartic, but in ways that will make it cathartic or transformative. And so I really studied his research, and I really looked at what he, what he said about that. And in a very interesting way, it jives very closely with kind of really good craft techniques. So you tell it in a story form, ergo, it reads like a novel. I do have lots of people tell me, not lots of people, but, several people who've read it will say, I just kept forgetting it was memoir. And that's good. That's what I wanted. I wanted it to be a really kind of a, almost like you're reading fiction, fast paced, but I wanted to be a trustworthy narrator as well. So, I just read a lot of Pennebaker's work. He has one called Expressive Writing, Words That Heal. In that book, he talks a lot about how if you get into the mind, if you successfully write your work in a way that gets into the other's mind, the person who hurts you, become that person, figure out what makes them tick, know that it's, don't look at it from your view, look at it from theirs. And once you do that, it's really fascinating because it does change the way you see things. There's another great book, if people are interested on this topic, by the way, that's by a woman who's written several memoirs also, and her name is Louise DeSalvo, and she has a book called Writing as a Way of Healing, How Telling Our Stories Transforms Our Lives. And she kind of takes her own research and synthesizes Pennebaker's with hers. So it's a really fast read and a good read, and very helpful if you're writing about any kind of trauma.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's really interesting. So what's next? Do you want to write another book? Are you writing another book?
Well, right now I'm trying to give An Imperfect Rapture a chance to breathe.
Right.
I've got a couple festivals to go to and all that. And of course, I just told you I had this move after 20 years. So I'm still kind of trying to find where I put XYZ in which box. But, you know, and maybe all authors feel this way. And I really hope that your listeners understand that this is not the least bit immodest. In fact, it's probably just my own insecurity. But I can't even imagine writing anything I love as much as this book. And so I've tried to write. But I feel so pressured because I think I worked so hard on this book, and, you know, I've had readers say, well, what about, are you writing a sequel? You know, there are a lot of years between 24 and 60. But I think right now I'm taking a stab at a few essays. The essay form feels, I have had a couple published, but the form feels a little bit constraining to me. I mean, life is just not that easy and neat. So I'm moving back toward another memoir, I'm pretty sure, but I don't know what slice of life is calling me yet. I think it's later in life. I think it's more contemporary to what's going on in my life.
Okay. And you've talked a little bit about this already, saying that, you know, you wrote in grammar school and you kind of saw it as your past. So it's clearly something that's always been close to your heart. Do you think that you would have followed that path had you not written this memoir? Do you think writing would have come out in another way?
Well, you know, as a litigator, so one of the things I thought would be okay about practicing law, there were two things. I had a minor in, my major was music, my minor was theater, and I always loved theater, so I thought, well, you know, I'll be on stage in the courtroom and I'll do some writing and that will be fun. Well, I was very rarely on stage in the courtroom. Litigation is all about writing briefs and being mistreated by defense lawyers. So I really
and it's not really creative writing. I mean, it's very technical writing.
That's exactly what I was saying. In fact, the opposite happened. The when I practiced law, I could not squeeze a creative word out of myself. By the end of the day, you're exactly right. It is so different, and my brain would just not switch over. And that was frustrating. I tried to write a novel while I was practicing law early on. I tried to write some short fiction, and I couldn't. So I think, I think I always wanted to write. I wanted to do that much more than I wanted to be a lawyer. I think just being a lawyer for me was just a way, really it seemed like my only way to get out of poverty, to be able to be something, you know, to be self-sustaining, self-sufficient. So I did that, you know, I'm not going to say for all the wrong reasons, because I do tend to think that whatever happens in our lives was meant to be. And so I don't think it was necessarily the wrong step, but in a perfect world, if I'd had been self-sufficient and had, you know, a silver spoon or something, I would have started out writing and just stayed on that path or stayed, you know, playing piano. I used to play piano a lot as well.
I'm jumping in here so we can take our second break of the podcast, but I just realized that she said she used to play piano a lot as well. It didn't occur to me to ask, does she not play as much? Does she not play at all? The things that I think of after the fact. Anyway, we're going to take that second break. Stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. from news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, guaranteed to fill that podcast itch, whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Let's go ahead and jump right back into that interview with author Kelly J. Beard about her memoir, An Imperfect Rapture.
And so out of your own unique perspective and the way you came to writing, do you have advice for aspiring authors?
I would say pay attention and don't rush yourself. I think one of the things I saw at VCFA that was really interesting, but also odd to me. It was how many people would introduce themselves as, and this is one reason I think I'm a little hesitant to talk about the fact that I wrote Teddy Bears Galore when I was, you know, seven, but so many people identify with being writers. And I am a writer. I always know I wanted to be a writer. And everybody's a writer. We're all writers. We might not have gotten around to putting it down on paper yet, but I think everybody is a writer. Everybody has stories. And particularly if you're writing memoir, I would say, you know, don't rush it. Because to me, the interesting part of memoir, and I think that's one reason I'm not quite ready to write anything about, you know, where I am right now or what's been going on in my life the last year or so, is because it takes some time to kind of steep. It's like a tea bag. You've got to have some, you want to have some, not to mix metaphors here, but some texture and in your writing. And you can't, I mean, God bless you if you're 23, it may be that a 23 or 24-year-old is going to write a terrific memoir, but what I tended to see in workshops was that those folks who were really motivated to write memoir and they were very young, they didn't have the life experience to really kind of sit back and reflect on the interior process, because it isn't, you know, a string of anecdotes, as we said. You have to be able to figure out what it is about that experience, what was going on in your own interiority, the interiority of others, what makes this experience resonate with, you know, universally. And so I think that's a tough thing. It's certainly not as hard to do that if you're young and you're writing novels or poetry, but I think that's a really tough gig for a young person to bite off memoir. And I think it's one reason I don't enjoy a lot of memoir from young people. I read, there's one woman who's 90 something who writes these lovely little memoirs. She's British. I think her name is Diane Ahill. I don't know if you've heard of her. I think she's a bit obscure, but lovely little memoirs. She's 90. You know, she gives you an elder's perspective that's really valuable. And fascinating.
Yeah. You read a lot of memoirs, as you said, in preparation mm-hmm. for writing your own. What else do you like to read when you have time?
It's funny. You know, when I was a lawyer, I read murder mysteries constantly. And I actually used to think that was how I was going to have my big break. I would write a murder mystery, make some money, travel the world. I never wrote the murder mystery, but I did read them. I just love British murder mysteries. And so I've read all the P.D. James, Ruth Rendell, I mean, all of the good old ones too, Agatha Christie. And then I like the Swedish and the Norwegian, kind of the noir murder mysteries. I used to read those all the time. Once I started working on this memoir, it's funny, and I really started reading very good work. I read Virginia Woolf and Gorky and some beautiful, there's a beautiful memoir. It's really one of my favorite books ever. And I hadn't even heard of this guy, but it's called The House of Prayer Number 2. And I think the guy's name is, I want to say Mark Roberts. He's got one of those names, Mark Richards. So it could be Richard Mark, but I think it's Mark Richard. So Mark Richard wrote this book called House of Prayer Number 2. It's gorgeous. And it kind of freed me up, I think, a little bit to talk about, to write about the possibility of miracles. And just so just now I love reading the very best. So I read novels. I read it sometimes, but I will tell you the truth. I like, memoir is still my favorite genre. If I can read a good memoir, I'm just happy.
Nice. I know you have a website, so can you tell people where your website address and where they can find you on social media?
Absolutely. Thank you. So my website is www.kellyjbeard.com. Let me, a slight aside about that website. Initially, my daughter, bless her heart, put together a WordPress website for me for free because I was on such a shoestring. And I just didn't, the book wasn't out yet, and I just wanted to put something together so I had a presence. And it was beautiful. But WordPress started doing this strange thing where if you don't pay them, they put these really, my WordPress site had these really grotesque ads on it all the time. So I tried to just move away from WordPress, and I just finally just hired someone to put a website together. So he's used a lot of what my daughter actually already did, but just took it and put it into a website that nobody can put weird ads on. So I say all that just to say that sometimes people still get routed to the WordPress website. So I just say, if you put in www.kellyjbeard.com and then you put a /author or /author or something like that, you're more likely to get the actual website. And it has some blog posts that are essentially essays, more contemporary essays on it, and some notes about what's coming up and what's been going on. So social media, I am on Facebook, although, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with it like everyone. But I am on Facebook and I probably post a couple things. And I certainly pay attention to what my friends are doing. But I never have understood the algorithms of Facebook. I'll sometimes not see very dear friends and find out they posted something later. So it's still a mystery to me. But I'm on Facebook and I'm nevertheless, and also Instagram. So okay. Mostly you'll see pictures of my grandson on Instagram.
Oh, nice. So those are more personal as opposed to like author pages?
They are.
Okay. Just checking so people can, because there are, I'm looking now, multiple Kelly Beards pop up when I type in your name.
Really? Oh.
On Facebook, yeah. Sorry, you're not the only one.
I'm not unique.
Thank you for that. So we've talked about, you know, we've talked about the book and writing, et cetera, but is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to talk about in this interview?
I can't think of anything, Sarah. I think you have been very thorough.
Okay.
I guess if you think that people do sometimes ask me about, how it was to leave a fairly strict or abusive religious community and still retain a sense of spirituality and faith. And I haven't always, it's come back later in life. And so I've spent a lot of time actually thinking about that. This is probably not going to be a very good answer to the question. I'm raising myself, so feel free to cut this out. But I think, as I look back on my life, I have often thought it's, and writing this is what made me really understand this. I've often thought that if there were just one, if one fewer person had been kind to me, there weren't that many people who were, but there were people who paid attention. You know, the nun at the college I went to, there were people, the principal of the last high school I was at, the Sunday school teacher who bought me shoes. There were people in my life just now and then that did such kind acts. And I often, and also there were people who did really horrifying things to me. Mm-hmm. So I often wonder, so if I had one fewer kind person or one, additional mean person, what would have happened in my life? And I think, it would have, the answer to the former is, who knows, I would probably, have written 25 books instead of one. and the answer to the latter is I probably wouldn't be here. So in thinking about that and in trying to figure out, because one of the other things I read a lot, I read a lot of spiritual books. That's really a broad thing, but that goes everywhere from, Thich Nhat Hanh to Einstein in my book. But couple of quotes that have really just, I mean, I just memorized them because I love them so much. One of them was a Jung quote about, as I say, I memorize it now, I can't remember, but there's a Jung, of course, talked a lot in his later life about actually experiencing transcendence in his faith. And it was something he did not want to talk about when he was younger. He just wrote it in his memoir just before he died. And he talks a lot about how the fact that if you have an experiential moment of divine presence, and I believe I've described a couple of those in the book, mm-hmm. despite anything else, those things remain with you. No one can tell you that there's nothing there if you've experienced a presence of something being there. It's not that you always feel it or you always know it, but you aren't going to be able to dismiss it. And so I think for me, I always searched, even when I knew I couldn't be in exactly the kind of faith my parents were. I always searched. I felt deeply that I had experienced moments of divine presence that I wanted to find some way to invite into my life again. Mm-hmm. So I guess the other quote that comes to mind that I love is that Einstein quote, and maybe everyone knows it so well, we don't need to quote it again, but that one actually really is well known. And I love this quote. He says, "There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle." Mm-hmm. And I love that. I think he went on to say, "I choose to believe everything is." And I'm making that choice.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for that, especially what you talked about in terms of just like one fewer act of kindness or one less kind person, because, you know, I don't know you, but just from reading your biography and knowing where you are now, the brief little bit I know that you're, you know, a lawyer in Atlanta, et cetera, and reading your early life, I'm so amazed that, because even outside of the abuse and the religious craziness, you couldn't see until you were in sixth grade. You were legally blind until you were in sixth grade. I mean, that alone could have just derailed your life. And so I just kept reading this book thinking, wow. So it really is amazing, just the little things that affect the end result. And I think as difficult sometimes as this book was to read for me, at times when I was like, oh gosh, that's just awful, right? That I kept thinking, wow, but where it ends up. And so I don't quite have a point here, but I just want to say thank you, I guess, for that.
No, that's a great point. And I, you know, that's something no one has asked me about previously. And I think you're right. I mean, that is not being able to see for the first 12 years of your life, literally not being able to see the chalkboard or any of these things. And actually I heard this on, I don't know if you ever listened to the Doctor Channel, but I'm addicted to it. And I heard on the Doctor Channel recently, this ophthalmologist talking about how the brain gets wired when you're young and how people who can't see, and this is what was real, it was really sad. I just wept when I was listening to this because it's so true too. People who grow up and they can't see, their brains do these odd things. So, for example, I have so many typos in my work. It's terrible. I always have to hire somebody to read it. And I can copy edit literally 25 times. And my brain will nevertheless put something on the page that isn't there. It's just weird. So, that's been a really... And right now, you know, as you get older and my vision is I'm having a little trouble with some, you know, cataracts and some other things. It is just so much more I mean, it's always frightening to deal with your eyesight, but yeah, it's terrifying to think about.
Yeah. I've had horrible vision. Also, I got glasses when I was in second grade and I just think, man, what if I hadn't, you know?
Oh, so, I know. Used to envy those girls with their glasses in the second grade.
Yeah. Wow, I feel so special now that I can see.
Oh, dear.
So, at any rate, I do want to thank you again for taking time out of your weekend to come and talk to me. The book is An Imperfect Rapture, and it's available now, correct? It's not pre-order?
Yes, it's available.
It's available now. So, Kelly, thank you so much.
Sarah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
So once again, I want to thank my guest, Kelly J. Beard, for coming on the podcast and talking about her memoir, An Imperfect Rapture. I will try to use other words besides wow, but I really, truly did love this book. I just loved the way she took the experiences in her life that were not good. Her childhood was not great, obviously. It was pretty horrible in a lot of ways, and presented those in ways that really examined those experiences, but not only from her perspective, but examined where the people in her life may have been coming from. Not excusing any behavior, but just saying, now that I'm older and I'm not in that situation, this is what I have come to understand about those experiences, about those relationships. And her writing, as I said, is beautiful. It is evocative of so many emotions. I cannot say enough good things about this book. So if this is a book that sounds like something that you would like to read, you are in luck, because we do have giveaway copies for this. It's very easy to enter that giveaway. Just go to our Facebook, our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and comment on this episode. It's episode 133, Interview with Kelly J. Beard. That's it. Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and comment on the post with this episode, Interview 133, Interview with Kelly J. Beard, and you will automatically be entered to win a copy of An Imperfect Rapture. And you won't regret it. It's really, really good, and I think you'll enjoy it. So thank you again to Kelly. Thank you, as always, to you, my listeners. I so appreciate you. You have no idea how much I appreciate you and how much I think about you and wonder what you're reading and what you might want to hear on this podcast. I love to hear from you, so let me know your thoughts. Let me know if there's something specific you want to hear on the podcast, if that's a book that you've read that you love and you want me to talk about, or if there's an author that you would love for me to interview. Maybe I can get them on the podcast. I don't know. You never know until you try. So hit me up on social media. Obviously, you can go there and enter the giveaway. But if you have other things you want to chat about, that would be cool, too. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you again for joining me. Join me again on Thursday when I am once again going to try to talk about dragons. I know I said that last week at the end of the episode, right? But then I still have this cold hanging around and I keep losing my voice. So nobody wants a podcast host that sounds worse than I have been sounding. So wish me luck. I'm going to try to do the dragon episode on this Thursday, and we'll see how it goes. Join me then. And in the meantime, go out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.